Apple again blows away expectations. Where does the company go from here?
Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
Good morning from APM American Public Media in Los Angeles. I'm Adrienne Hill. Now, the global perspective in business and economics. We're starting the day with Apple. The company sold 37 million iPhones in the last 3 months of 2011. The U.S. is Apple's biggest market, but it sells its iPhone in 90 countries. Some of the strongest sales growth was in China, but economists say the company could and should be performing even better there. Marketplace's Rob Schmitz reports from Shanghai.
Yesterday, in a news conference broadcast on the web, Apple CEO Tim Cook had this to say about the China market for iPhones and iPads.
China is an extremely important market for us, and we continue to look at how to grow it further.
Sean Ryan, head of China market research in Shanghai, says from the ground in China, it sure doesn't seem like Apple treats China like an important market.
They never have enough product and enough retail points of sale in China to cater to the huge demand for their products. They only have 5 stores in mainland China selling the iPhone.
The advice to customers outside Apple's Beijing store when the iPhone 4S launched 2 weeks ago? Go home. A near riot ensued. Apple reportedly has plans to build 25 more stores in China. How many would it take to keep up with demand? Ryan says his firm has done its own research. The verdict? 100. In Shanghai, I'm Rob Schmitz for Marketplace.
Now to Japan. The country is known for the cars and TVs it sells to the rest of the world. But last year, Japan bought more stuff from abroad than it sold. It's the country's first trade deficit in 30 years. For more, we go to the BBC's Mariko Oi in Tokyo. Good morning.
Good morning.
So what's going on in Japan? Why are we seeing this trade deficit now?
Well, it's mainly because of natural disasters at home as well as abroad. Of course, we've been following the earthquake that happened in March, which not only damaged factories but also disrupted supply chains. And then you had Thailand's flooding, where Japan's car makers had quite a few factories. So those two incidents definitely had an impact on exporters. And yet, despite this natural disaster, the Japanese yen had been very strong. So the strong yen makes their products more expensive overseas.
Now, is there any upside to this deficit?
From the American point of view, this is what trade representatives wanted for decades. After all, Japan invented this model, the growth model, led by export sectors, which had been adopted now by China and other Asian economies. But the way that Japan fell back into a trade deficit, it probably wasn't exactly what U.S. trade representatives wanted. As I mentioned, it is mainly because of natural disasters, as well as the fact that import costs rose because Japan had to buy a lot more oil and gas in the wake of the nuclear accident at the power plant in Fukushima.
The BBC's Mariko Oi, thanks so much.
Thank you.
Now, let's do the numbers. Markets are up in Asia, down in Europe. In the State of the Union yesterday, President Obama offered up a new plan to right the housing market. We'll get a better sense of where things are with real estate a little later this morning in a slew of reports. On Wall Street yesterday, the Dow closed down 33 points to finish at 12,675.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Invest Northern Ireland. Northern Ireland, a European location offering a workforce that's well-educated, smart, and driven. More at investni.com/invest. And by Constant Contact, combining email marketing and social media for more customers and more time back on the clock. Learn more at constantcontact.com.
It was a year ago today that massive protests began in Egypt, protests that toppled longtime ruler Hosni Mubarak. To mark the anniversary, we're going to spend the next week looking at Egypt's economy, 1 year on. Marketplace's Stephen Beard is just off Tahrir Square today and joins us now. Good morning, Stephen.
Good morning, Adrian.
So today marks the anniversary of the first major protest. What's the scene there?
Well, I'm watching this from a hotel balcony overlooking the square, Adrian. It's a very impressive sight. There must be tens of thousands of people down in Tahrir Square waving flags, chanting slogans, and waving placards with pictures of some of the scores of people who died in this revolution. This is a commemoration as well as a celebration and a protest.
And where does the revolution go from here?
Many people fear the revolution may yet be stolen, and they complain that although Mubarak has been ousted, many of his cronies are still running the country and for their own benefit. Here's a young man who's taking part in today's protest, Hamida Heggie.
Corruption is like a pyramid. We only removed the head of it. The rest of the pyramid is still here. It's very big. But in order to remove the corruption, we need to have a clear path to work on.
He says he's here today to make sure the revolution improves the lives not just of a small elite, but of the broad mass of the Egyptian people.
And so are Egyptian people overall better off today than they were a year ago?
No, they're not. I mean, the revolution and the unrest have hit tourism and the economy slowed down quite dramatically. But, you know, I've not met a single Egyptian since I arrived a week ago who says, I wish we hadn't had that revolution. Earlier today, I met 31-year-old Osama Mohammed, whose small clothing shop folded during the past year.
How do you feel about the revolution, then? You must be unhappy about the revolution.
I'm so happy. I'm ready to lose my life for my country, for the revolution.
So still a lot of revolutionary fervour here, but Egypt's got a very long way to go to satisfy the hopes the revolution unleashed to improve the lives of ordinary Egyptians. 40% of the people in this country still live on only around $2 a day.
Marketplace's Stephen Beard in Cairo. Thanks.
OK, Adrian.
And finally, brown is the new color of green. An article in the Wall Street Journal reports that many companies are embracing brown paper products. Brown napkins, paper towels, even brown toilet paper. Some of the attraction, if you want to call it that, is what the color symbolizes, that it's better for the environment. But like so many commercial trends, it seems this one has been taken to its extreme. One company actually adds brown pigments to its environmentally friendly diapers. In Los Angeles, I'm Adrienne Hill. This is the Marketplace Morning Report. This is APM, American Public Media.
Here's the Arab Spring, seen by an occupier.
People in Egypt are really putting their lives on the line. We're not facing the same kind of violence.
And Occupy, from where an Egyptian protester sits.
And I don't see what's happening in the States, nor Greece, and this Arab Spring as detached.
I'm Kai Rizdal. A dialogue on protest next time on Marketplace from APM, American Public Media.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.